Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Panel Scanners. I'm your host, Johnny Caps. With me, as always, is Darren.
You're not my host. I love you because you sleep above the covers. 4 feet above the covers.
Thank you, Darren. And my treasured sidekick, Phil. We are talking about everybody's favorite literature works. Comic books.
God, I love Conway's Irish Ale, and boy, do we all need it.
Yeah, man.
Man, this is a jam-packed episode.
It is.
I'm excited about this one.
A lot of good stuff going on. Well, we're talking about comic books, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about comics. And I got some news coming from the DC front, all right?
Okay.
Well, you just informed me, I know that Geoff Johns is taking over Superman.
Yes.
Along with artist John Romita Jr.
And this is kind of a big deal.
This is a very big deal.
Because it's his first ever DC book.
John Romita Jr., for any... you guys just need to look up his artwork because he is phenomenal. He has done pretty much everything.
Love his Spider-Man stuff.
Oh, yeah, me too. If you go back to our episode where we were discussing our favorite artists, he's on my list.
Oh, of course he is.
Beautiful, beautiful Spider-Man work. And considering that I have a chub for Spidey, that's just kind of the way it rolls.
Yeah. But going along with that, with this, Superman is actually not featured on the Justice League coming up. As everybody knows, the Forever Evil storyline is running through the DC Comics right now. And in May's Justice League comic, Lex Luthor has taken Superman's place on the Justice League. Along with Batman, Wonder Woman, Shazam, Captain Cold. And I know,
These things is not like the other
ones. That's pretty much everybody's WTF moment. Speaking of WTF moments, NBC has confirmed syndication for Constantine.
I saw that.
Which, as a huge Constantine fan myself, is kind of a... How are they going to get away with that in syndication?
They can. You can be creative with it. You don't need to... What the hope would be, wouldn't it, is that a lot of the horror elements are implied, which in turn makes them scarier. You don't need the gore. I think it's an exciting
movie. See, if they were to film Hellblazer exactly, it would be darker than Dexter.
So you're saying, like, if they did it properly, it would need to be, like, an HBO show.
Oh, it would need to be, yeah.
Dexter,
it would need to be
though...
An
I'm about to finish season 8. It's taking a long time.
I haven't finished it yet.
No spoilers, but Dexter got a little bit less dark every year to the point where it wasn't even like... I forgot he was a serial killer half the time. Like,
I hear that from a lot of people.
I actually got disinterested in the episodes where it was dealing with Colin Hanks was the villain. That's where I kind of fell off.
But now, you know what? I'm kind of a completist. I'm like, well, I've come this far.
That's where I'm at.
Netflix.
Yeah. Anyhow, sorry.
I've come this far.
Well, moving on. This is kind of cool. Joseph Gordon-Levitt has been confirmed to play Neil Gaiman's Sandman.
Well, what do you think?
Yeah. He's too young. Okay, there. I said it.
Okay.
Yeah, but
he's too young and too innocent looking.
But I mean, just in general, how do you feel about them making Sandman?
I'm stoked.
Yeah?
I'm looking forward to it. You know what? They have a script by Jack Tomey. I'm assuming it's Tomey because it's spelled just like Jim.
Fair enough.
Tomey.
Okay. Baseball reference.
Jack Tomey, who I've never heard of, but it's getting a treatment by David Goyer.
Of course, I teach with a guy who's spelled the same way, and his name is Thome.
So it could be Jack Thome, Jack Tomey, whatever. Nobody's ever heard of him. He hasn't written a whole lot, but it's getting a treatment by David Goyer, and David Goyer is a geek name. So...
Yeah, he kind of shepherded... He was the writer of the Batman Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah.
And which is great, and he was also the writer of Man of Steel. Boo!
I liked Man of Steel.
Oh, I'm gonna get into that.
Okay. We don't need to speak about that.
Yeah, we will.
I'm pretty happy that Neil Gaiman's featured character is getting a movie. I'm happy about that.
Okay.
I'm pretty stoked, especially if they do it well. Moving back to actual comic books. Justice League Canada, which was
I'm sorry.
Jeff Lemire's.
Don't you mean? Oh, I'm sorry, eh?
Hey, was this a boot? There's a Justice League team up here.
It's it's Chris Jericho. Who else? It's William Shatner.
And they eat ham bacon.
Michael J. Fox. And the McKenzie brothers, right?
Ooh, Michael J. Fox would be
that's
sweet.
That's actually very, very close.
What do we call him, the Shaker?
Oh,
shit, that's not cool.
Neil Peart, Alex Lifeson, and Geddy Lee.
All right. No, Justice League Canada is no more, actually. Jeff Lemire did change the name because of those innuendos. He said specifically.
You hoser.
Yes, thank you. Having a Canadian moment here.
How do you not
it's
love
now Justice League United, and it stars Animal Man, Adam Strange, Hawkman, Supergirl, and a few others. Adam Strange is an official Canadian.
I was going to say, are any of them actually Canadian?
Hawkman is not. Animal Man is not. Supergirl is.
Let's be honest.
Oh, wait, no, she's from Krypton.
Let's be honest.
Go for it.
Isn't Justice League Canada kind of like AAA ball? Like, it's like you're in the majors.
It is.
And it's like, you're in the majors, and like you're not able to throw strikes, so they send you down to the minors to get yourself right. We'll call you back up.
It's like, what was it, NXL? Was that the one that they ran from, like, the WWF?
Oh, XFL?
XFL.
It's like, well...
You're not quite football, but just go out there and play, kids.
Just go. No, it's more like the West Coast Avengers.
We're going to send you down
Avengers
to Class
West
AAA,
Coast.
The West Coast.
Which,
hey, Squirrel Girl was in that mess.
Right,
man.
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. But, no, they had some... I'm looking forward to the comic just because Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, that's fair.
And they also introduced, DC also introduced, a second weekly comic book. Everyone knows about Batman Eternal, a year-long weekly comic book. Another one is coming out, hurting my wallet even more, called Future's End, which is set a few years in the future, and it will involve Grifter and Batman Beyond.
Terry McGinnis. Now, is Kyle Higgins writing? Because I heard, it's one of the things I want to read. I have not read his Batman Beyond stuff, but... I hear it's great.
I forget who... I think there are four different writers.
Because Kyle Higgins wrote Nightwing.
Kyle Higgins is involved with Future's End. Higgins is, I believe, involved. Now that Nightwing is canceled.
They canceled Nightwing?
They did cancel Nightwing. Wow. He got unmasked in Forever Evil. And then they canceled the book, so rumors are flying about what happens to that character.
Could you say that slightly more flamboyantly?
Oh, please.
There it is.
He's wearing tight pants.
Why do you have to be like that?
Wow,
why you gotta hate on me like that? But
yeah,
anyways.
No.
Are moving. All right. I don't have to justify that. Darren, it is now time for your news.
Man of Steel 2, Justice League 1, Batman of Steel, Batman, Superman versus Batman, whatever the heck they're calling it, is pushed back to 2016. A year, virtually a year, 11 months, or has it, because it, you know, that was always unconfirmed. I believe it has been confirmed since we last met. Jesse Eisenberg is Lex Luthor. When they had, what's the guy's name who played in Breaking Bad? I never saw it, but he's been
I was really looking forward to
I was
that.
Rooting for him.
Yeah, I was really
but
looking
he's
forward
in,
to that.
He did the Godzilla thing, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, but whatever.
Cranston.
What do we feel about this?
Cranston.
Brian Cranston. Mm-hmm.
Cranston.
Mm-hmm. What do we feel about Zuckerberg...
Young.
Basically playing Luthor.
He's too young.
And here's the thing. It doesn't bother me, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm already not on board.
Is it because of Batfleck?
No. I think I've gone on record in this podcast saying that Ben Affleck, I think, is going to crush it as Batman.
He's
because,
okay.
Say what you want, over the last, like, 5 or 6 years, he has proven himself to be an elite filmmaker. So
that's
I
fair.
Think he's going to crush it as Batman. I just, you know, I'm so off. The Man of Steel. The more I thought about that movie, so whenever you harp on me for bashing Spider-Man, keep in mind that my boy, I bashed a lot harder than Spider-Man.
Yeah,
you're just a harsh critic, man.
You know what? I've actually been thinking a lot about that.
You are
because I did not like Thor. But that can we agree?
I didn't see it yet.
You haven't seen the original Thor?
No.
Oh, okay.
Thor only recently has become a character that I give a shit, let alone two about. So
well, I read Thor with when Walt Simonson's run. My old roommate had it, and I really enjoyed it.
I just started enjoying it when Jason Aaron took the reins, like fairly recently.
Aaron is such an incredible.
You saw Thor?
I've saw them both.
That's a bad movie. The first one's terrible. I mean, it's not just because it's Thor. I thought it was horrible.
See, I thought Captain America was terrible.
I thought Captain America the first hour
was
good, and it just fell apart. I didn't like Captain America. I didn't like Iron Man 2. I haven't seen Iron Man 3. I hated The Amazing Spider-Man. I hated Man of Steel more than that. So before you jump on me for being a hater, I'm not a hater at all. I didn't.
He's just harsh.
We've seen a trailer. Oh my god, that looks like a freaking video game.
Yeah.
Like that looks terrible.
Yeah, it does.
I feel bad for you.
I'm really worried.
Anyway,
might stick to my comics.
Jeremy Irons is Alfred. My guess is that.
I'm stoked about that.
My guess is they're going to do the updated version of Alfred where he's a little bit more of a tough guy. Whatever. And then the future of DC animated movies is going to be in lockstep with the comics now. So when we were promised to get the animated versions of The Long Halloween, which people freaked out about, but did you guys see the animated Dark Knight Rises? OMG.
I only saw part one. Part two.
That was amazing.
Part one was awesome.
Part
I just haven't
one
had a chance to watch part
was
two.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It is it is a perfect companion piece to the comic. You're not missing much. So I kind of feel like this is a big loss because now I felt like they could do The Long Halloween. They did year one, which was decent. But we were supposed to get the Judas contract, the Teen Titans. We were supposed to get some Nightwing.
That would have been great.
But as an English teacher, that bothers me because I want people reading it.
Well, yeah, but like...
It takes away some of the imagination.
Well, I don't care about that. I'm thinking about me. I've read those already.
All right, fair enough.
But I gotta say, the Flashpoint one they did, I read Flashpoint, which led into the New 52, and enjoyed Flashpoint a lot. I did not like the cartoon movie at all. It was so violent, and it was almost unnecessarily violent.
Well, if you read all of the miniseries that coincided with Flashpoint, it was an extremely violent event.
I didn't. I just read the Flashpoint, and I thought it was a very inventive story.
It was good. It was a good way to reinvent the universe.
And in some extremely heartbreakingly sad news, Jim Henson's son, the man who has been the pilot of the Henson Company over the last almost 30 years since... 20 years since Jim Henson passed away. Almost 25.
It's been a while.
He's been responsible for all the Muppets incarnations and a lot of children's programming like Sid the Science Kid that I know my daughter really likes. He passed away.
So sad.
Only in his 40s.
Yeah.
And building off of the one-liner I threw at you was from Ghostbusters. Harold Ramis died earlier this week.
That hurt.
His writing and his directing, but...
One of the people that, like, I just remember as a kid one of those comedians that you're like, man, I want to be a comedian because I want to be like...
Well, he wasn't a comedian, though.
He was, though.
No, he was not. He was an actor.
He was an actor. He never did. But he did very well in comedic roles. He wasn't a stand-up comedian.
No, he was never stand-up.
He was a comedian on screen.
He was a comedic actor.
Well, yeah, and he wrote...
Stripes?
He wrote and directed Groundhog Day.
Yes.
He wrote... He didn't write Stripes, but he was in it as an actor... And Ivan Reitman actually chose him. He asked him to rewrite Ghostbusters for him and Bill Murray. Ghostbusters is maybe... I would put it up there as the most quotable movie of all time. It's basically 2 hours of one-liners for Bill Murray.
Did you ever get to play the third game? The game that replaced the third movie? Because he had a lot...
You're throwing me off here. Let me finish. It was like 2 hours of one-liners for Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But all of those one-liners are set up almost always by Harold Ramis as Egon Spengler, like the one I said. It was when he had visited Sigourney Weaver and she was levitating above the bed in the prison. And Harold Ramis says, you know, all this ectoplasmic activity is centered around your girlfriend's apartment when he says, she's not my girlfriend. I love her because she sleeps above the covers. 4 feet above the covers.
Gatekeeper. Yes.
Or like when they're on the... when they're in the elevator and they turn on the proton packs, and he's like, Egon's like, oh, by the way, don't cross the streams. Why? What happens if we cross the streams? Our insides become our outsides. And then Bill Murray everyone looks at me and goes, good safety tip. Thanks, Egon. He wrote all of those lines, too.
Yeah, he's...
Harold Ramis was a...
Bill Murray opens the refrigerator and sees the vortex to hell. Just very simply closes it.
Very nice.
Very simply closes it, almost no reaction. Generally, you don't see that in a major appliance. Come on, that's a hard... That little, like, listen, 12-year-old Darren Posick felt that one, okay?
And what I was saying is they released a game that was supposed to replace the third movie, and Harold Ramis wrote the majority of the script for it. the game, it was so true to the movies, and it was so unbelievably hilarious throughout the whole thing.
I've never
played
it.
If you have not played it, seriously, it's like less than 8 hours of your life. Pick it up, give it a shot. Like, brilliant.
What system?
You know, the new stuff, like, well, the newer stuff, not the newest, but like 360 and
gotcha. Right.
So, on to me and my Marvel-y style news. First and foremost, Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., their ratings have actually leveled out, finally. Darren keeps saying that they're dropping, and they have had some low episodes, but as a whole, they're saying they're leveling out.
Last episode actually jumped a couple.
Slightly. Yeah. Very slightly.
Yeah.
And I'm going to IMDb, and that's not what I'm seeing, but go ahead.
See, but IMDb is slightly off due to all the reports outside of IMDb that I'm reading that...
I think you're a little too close to this, but go ahead.
No, it's not even that. I think you're too far from it. And the fact that you don't like the show yourself.
I haven't watched the show.
That's the problem.
Yes.
But I'm telling you, by reading things outside of IMDb, which is not the end-all resource,
it's not.
Reading other reports from other people, it's leveling out around 6.75 million per episode.
Which is way lower than it.
Which is lower than what was anticipated, but still decent ratings. ABC knee-jerk said it was a disappointment because it was spiraling for a while, and they've come back to just kind of go, you know, we'll wait and see. While all of the people that put out the statistics for the possibility of anything being renewed are saying that there's a 9 out of 10 chance that they will renew it for a second season, especially after the Deathlock reveal
you
in the last
episode.
You would
think
which
that
is
at the very
likely,
least
we'll get two seasons out of this.
Yeah, they're going to take us to the new Avengers
In reality... Absolutely. Watching the show, I can agree completely that it started off very, very slow and it was not getting the love. And the fact that they keep having these really long hiatuses are not helping.
No, they're not.
But if they actually pick up steam again here shortly, which they should be, with Deathlock revealed, with Sif being in it, I see ratings maybe taking a very slight spike and being where it needs to be because the episodes that were coming out after the last hiatus were very, very solid.
If I could just shift gears just briefly for a moment, not moving away from the show, but moving to financially, Avengers is Disney's most valuable property right now.
For sure.
But they don't want to spend all the money they're making from Avengers on a show that's failing.
I will agree. But as long if they can show that they are showing any profit, they're going to keep that show on.
I'll challenge that.
Go for it.
I bet you Star Wars is way more profitable for them.
Not yet.
I bet it is already.
I don't.
Because they have all the licensing for that. And I will bet you the Star Wars merchandise outsells the Avengers merchandise by far.
I don't know. I really don't know at this point. That's something that we should look into. Because I think...
No, we really shouldn't. It's just me. It's just this is just all
this
hearsay.
This is just him playing devil's advocate.
Ridiculous.
But now, if you combine the net incomes from all of the movies... The Avengers movies, which Disney now owns.
Yeah, Disney owns everything.
It is well over $2 billion.
It's like, well, yeah. I would assume.
It's well over that. That's almost an Avengers movie alone.
Can I just say one thing?
Shoot.
Would you agree that as great as the Avengers is, and by the way, you know, of all the movies, like I started telling you, I didn't like this, I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Love the Avengers.
It's hard to not like.
Like, that's the reason why I don't like all of the other ones. I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
Hated Man of Steel, and I don't like The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
I don't like The Last Dark, Last Chapter. Didn't
Dark
like that
Knight
movie.
Rises. Nobody did.
I don't know about nobody.
Well,
it just wasn't as good as we were.
Wasn't as good as the first two.
There was just so many plot holes. Yeah. But that the Avengers is like, I walked out of there, and I'm a DC guy primarily, I walked out of there and went,
there it is.
See?
Yeah.
This is what we've been waiting for.
That
is what I expect out of a superhero movie.
Literally gasped during that movie a couple times. My wife looked at me like, really? She walked out loving it, though, too.
Dude,
whenever,
spoiler alert, if there's anybody in the world who has not seen Avengers.
So.
But whenever Iron Man flew, that was so phenomenal. Whenever he flew out of the atmosphere, I was seriously on the edge of my seat.
You know, the one big trick they pulled is in your head, you knew Iron Man was not going to die.
Yeah.
But in your heart, you're like,
don't die, Iron Man.
Would they?
Tony Stark. I thought about that. I thought, like, Joss Whedon, and he likes to kill people, and Joss Whedon, and they don't have a new...
That's why I kind of wondered if, like,
you
know, like, when they were talking about contract negotiations with him
yes!
and broken up. I wonder if that was all a smokescreen. It's like, let's see if
we can freak some people out.
Yeah. Like, say, well, we may as well kill him. But can we? Don't you think? Like, and this is why, you know, they did not do a good job setting up anything in a Man of Steel. But all they really need to do show in the trailer for Batman Superman is Batman and Superman about to fight, and that thing's gonna make a $8 billion.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, speaking of just Marvel movies as a whole, Ant-Man is going to occupy the Man of Steel 2 vacated July 17th spot.
I'll probably like that more.
It's you know, I'm actually interested in the fact that they're putting Ant-Man in their summer slot for 2015. I think that means that they have really high hopes for it, and I like Paul Rudd, and I think he might actually play
a great job.
I think he's going to play a really, really good Ant-Man. Also, Guardians of the Galaxy gave us its first full trailer and 30-second trailers for each individual member of the team.
Stoked.
I am really excited. I didn't know how I felt about it before. We were talking about it before the show off air, and the casting for Peter Quill is perfect.
Yeah, it was.
Rock Raccoon looks really nice. Drax looks good. Gamora looks really good. I mean, I'm excited. I think it's going to be a solid movie.
Oh, isn't that Uhura?
Yes.
From Star Trek?
Yeah.
And Darren pointed this out to me beforehand, that Guardians of the Galaxy already has a sequel 5 months before its release. That news is kind of shaky. They're not certain if that's the movie that's sliding into that spot. They're mentioning maybe Doctor Strange instead, which has been announced as a possible...
You always because Green Lantern was... The Green Lantern sequel was greenlit 2 months before its release, and how'd that work out
exactly.
For
it? Exactly, yeah. but they're saying that there is a script in existence for Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Also, Avengers 2 has officially begun its principal photography, which is good news for everyone who enjoyed that first movie. Hopefully they don't overwhelm us with way too many heroes, which is always a concern in that kind of movie. In the comic book world, there's another Marvel event coming in the summer, which makes me want to blow my brains out of my head. Original Sin, which is going to deal with some superheroes making bad decisions, is my understanding. And something that I just learned today on my way over here, that Scotty Young, the best known for his like X-Babies artwork, really, really, really childish,
fantastic artist,
is going to be doing a Rocket Raccoon comic. He's going to be writing it and drawing it, which I think fits very, very well for the character, especially if he's able to keep the snarkiness of Rocket Raccoon functional. His artwork should fit Rocket perfectly. So I'm excited for that book. But with that said, that is all I have with my news at the moment. There's more stuff floating around out there, but there's only so much time.
All right. Well, this week, all of the X-Men costumes were revealed for the upcoming X-Men Days of Future Past. We have some disappointed looks around this table.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was so stoked for this movie.
I still am.
I still am. You're right. But... that was one of those things you got and you went, who made this decision?
And I looked at Iceman and thought, oh,
he's been waiting patiently to go ahead and rail on this. Please go ahead.
Oh my god. So, we decided to go back through time and look at terrible costumes that have existed.
Yeah. Because
these costumes are so terrible. not even making my list is Jamaican Bishop. I don't want to get into it. Jamaica Bishop? Have you seen this picture?
Yes.
Holy hell.
I couldn't figure out who it was.
It was supposed to be Bishop. It's supposed to be. But there was one character that actually made my list of the worst costumes, and he ran really, really fast onto my list. That is Quicksilver. Holy hell. How could they butcher someone who already looks so terrible in comics?
You know what?
Even worse on the big screen.
You know what? Every time I go back to that, it does make me not want to see the movie.
Seriously. They put him in a new costume in the current X-Factor book that looks better than the garbage that they threw on this kid that doesn't look anything fucking like Pietro.
Listen, I watched Smallville for 10 years. They had Impulse / Barry Allen / The Flash.
Yeah.
Who had a hoodie and goggles. He thinks that costume sucks.
It is terrible. Yeah. It is terrible.
He said, I got the better end of this deal. And my show is almost 10 years old and in syndication.
I swear, if they put that costume on the Quicksilver who finds his way into the Avengers 2, which you know he's going to after that movie comes out.
No. He can't.
He can. They own the rights to Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Oh, really?
So they can, well, it's a shared rights thing. I posted something on Facebook like a month ago that was the spectrum of who owns what.
Oh wow.
And they are dual owned, so they can use it. So that's one of the things. So my number 10 is Quicksilver.
Yeah, how could it not?
Darren. Oh my god. Oh well. All right.
You must restrain yourself right now, because my number 10 is Spider-Man from The Amazing Spider-Man 2012. Yellow eyes, jaundiced Spider-Man? Was Peter Parker tossing back shots of vodka before he cried every time on screen? Well, that explains the constant waterworks from this actor.
He also had a black crotch piece.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that about?
Yeah, that,
No, just... No, I'm not...
I mean, I didn't like that movie, but that's just another thing.
The costume was rough. Yeah. Costume was rough.
All right, well, I wasn't able to get 10 worst costumes, but I did get some. And George Clooney from Batman and Robin.
Oh, yeah.
That is way too low on your list.
Oh, my God.
We'll get to that in about half an hour.
Don't worry about it. It's there.
You know what? I'm just picking out bad costumes. I don't actually... Oh, wow. Okay, it looks like I have some agreement around here, so let's go.
So, the movie before that would have been Batman Forever, which had that fucking terrible Riddler costume that Jim Carrey danced around.
The onesie!
The onesie with question marks. Oh, yeah. I question how Jim Carrey could squeeze his body into that. That... Haunts
Cheers.
My dreams, man. And I liked Jim Carrey at that time because he was the ridiculous Ace Ventura dude. No. Let's pull on a onesie.
I still love Jim Carrey.
I do, too.
I forgot about the onesie.
I gotta tell you, I avoided some of the obvious ones for the simple fact that I knew you guys would cover it. Now, my number 9 is Superman from The Man of Steel 2013. Now, admittedly...
Sorry.
I may be a bit skewed due to my increasing distaste for that movie, but after a while, didn't it just look like he was wearing wet footy pajamas?
You got nothing?
No.
You need me to go.
Costumes. Yeah, I got costumes. I'm sorry. I thought I had a response.
Go for it.
No, I got nothing on that. But... For the costumes, Halle Berry's Catwoman.
Oh, good lord, I'd forgotten about that.
No, it's on here.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
It's much higher for me.
Wow.
I mean, it was sexy, but...
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't Catwoman. Well, it wasn't anything close to Catwoman.
You know what? I guess the reason... it doesn't look like they tried at all.
No.
And I'm looking at things like this. Like, this was supposed to be great. Like... I don't know. You're right about that. No, one of the all-time worst.
It's bad.
Go.
So, what is more terrifying than a cop with a cod piece? Well, Judge Dredd wanted to show you that.
You got some good ones,
man.
Oh,
yeah.
The Sly Stallone.
Right.
Not the last one.
The Sly Stallone
one. Yeah, the Stallone one where it looked like he just... I mean, it's a cod piece, man. Like, it's his cod piece of justice. It's... Oh, no. No.
My number 8 is Superman from Superman Returns 2006.
Okay, that we can.
It is almost impressive how the producers decided on a costume that remains so faithful to the source material, yet still does not look like Superman. Audience memories had not lapsed enough to forget that this was an exact copy of Evil Superman from Superman 3.
<It's> true.
All right, I get to go with Howard the Duck.
Forgot about Howard the Duck.
There we go.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, yeah, Howard the Duck. They did not. This was not a digitized duck. This was not a computer animated duck. This was a little person in a duck costume. In one of the most beautifully bad movies ever made.
And it was a Lucasfilm.
It was a Lucasfilm.
It was the first Lucasfilm post Return of the Jedi.
How was that allowed to happen? A gorgeous movie. Horrible. Horribly bad.
I wish we'd have remembered that before we all bought into the prequels.
Right?
Before we saw them.
Well, this is my first delve into X3. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch! That costume.
Oh my gosh.
I forgot I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Oh, no. One, that line in that movie. Just icing on the cake. But that whole half-naked Juggernaut running through with a what looked like an old-timey boxing helmet on just didn't do it for me. It's not the unstoppable Juggernaut. It was some buffish guy running around half-naked for everyone to look at.
By the way, that was a Ricardo Montalban Wrath of Khan bodysuit. That wasn't even him. Number 7 for me. Sabretooth from X-Men Origins Wolverine 2009. Oh, yeah. Seriously, throw a hat on him and he more resembles Inspector Gadget than Wolverine's savage arch nemesis.
True. That was bad.
Go, Phil.
Yeah, see, this one might be slightly controversial, but let's talk about the Tin Man Green Goblin from the Spider-Man movie. It was horrible. Horrible! One of the most terrifying and most vicious villains that Spider-Man has ever come in contact with, let alone the man that killed his first love, slapped on not even tinfoil. Let's be honest. It was like he took a bunch of, like, ready-made whipped cream containers and smacked them on himself and spray-painted them green. That costume was horrendous. Don't get me wrong. Movie otherwise? Solid. Love the acting in that film. That costume was horrible.
My number 6... Bullseye from Daredevil 2003.
Almost made my list.
This version was so far removed from the source material and so poorly performed by Colin Farrell that I have never taken Bullseye seriously as a competent threat to anyone since then. Anytime he shows up in the comics, I'm like,
Colin Farrell. All right. Phil, what do you think?
Let's go back to 1997.
I know where you're going with this, and I think it's the same one.
When Shaq was big.
Oh.
Yes!
And he slapped on the Steel outfit.
Yes!
I loved John Henry Irons at the time. I love his comic. I refused to see that movie.
Oh,
I left it off the list because I refused to watch that movie.
Steel. I remember the movie.
Wow.
The costume?
Oh,
not
so
as bad as
right
the movie,
now.
But man, that costume.
I'm so happy. Right
horrible.
Now.
Let's stick in 1997 and go with the other DC movie from that year, which we've already brought up. Mr. Freeze from Batman and Robin 1997.
It almost made it.
Perhaps the very first movie that got negative internet buzz off of an image. The moment you saw images of Arnold Schwarzenegger as Victor Freeze, you knew Batman was gone and maybe for good. It's one of those moments where you laugh because you're so sad, and it's heartbreaking to see that. It's just like it's like hysterical blindness in a way.
Batman was actually gone for about like what 7 years.
I thought he was dead for sure.
Yeah,
like,
wow. That movie destroyed everything.
It really did. Phil, what do we got?
1989, The Punisher. What is the one thing that everyone thinks of when you think of the Punisher?
Skull. And the teeth are his belt.
At least that much. If not the
coolest
beautiful white go-go boots. Only person in the world that if you saw coming at you with white go-go boots, you would run the hell away.
Mm-hmm. McFoley. Dude
he
love.
Looked like a punk rock reject in that movie. And it made me never want to read a Punisher comic. Let alone whenever he interacted with
the
characters that I liked. Didn't want to read it.
My number 4, building off what you said, was Batman from Batman and Robin. Let's just forget about the ridiculous Batgirl and the ridiculous Robin Nightwing hybrid costume, because this movie was a lost cause before they introduced the Sub-Zero suit.
The hockey team from hell.
Yes. Tinfoil highlights on the outfit sunk Batman to near irretrievable lows,
absolutely correct.
None of us thought possible. None of us thought it was ever coming back. I really did. I was a defender. Like, I was in my 20s at the time, so I was always, like, defending. Like, if I was dating someone, I wouldn't, like, you know, be flamboyant or demonstrative with my comic book love. But if I found out you love Batman, I would try to convince him. But after that, I'm like, you're right. It sucks.
Well, I was 8 when that movie came out, so I wasn't allowed to see it until I was older.
You were lucky. It could have ruined you forever.
I'm joking, by the way. I just wanted to play out
you're
how
much
old
older
Darren
than
is.
8.
Yes.
I was going to say, I was older than 8.
No.
I'm younger than you.
Yes. No. All right. Phil,
so
what do we got?
I
do have one more.
I'm piggybacking off of your Halle Berry Catwoman, much higher on my list. That was where we went earlier. We were discussing beautiful women in comic book movies draws crowds. This proves otherwise.
Yeah.
Not pretty in that movie because you wanted to shoot your brains out. Darren.
My number three, and we're going to go a two for here. My three and two are very similar. Hobgoblin from Spider-Man 3, or the new Green Goblin, which we never did get clarified in 2007. Hey, Olympic snowboarder Shaun White is Hobgoblin. Or at least he may as well have been just one part of the overall mess that was Spider-Man 3.
It was a catastrophic movie, wasn't it? Mm. All right, Phil, what do we got for number three?
Let's throw leather on every single member of the X-Men. X-Men 3, all black X-Men costume.
God.
Now, one of the beauty...
Yeah.
One of the beautiful things, rather, of X-Men is that they're individuals.
It's diversity.
And their costumes reflect that. That movie made them interchangeable and, honestly, nothing fun to look at. Until even once Jean Grey went Phoenix-y, she just became the red version of those black costumes. No diversity. Made me want to punch myself.
You know what's funny? X-Men 3 is such an awful, awful movie. But the first X-Men was good, and that second X-Men was amazing. It was great. Really good. And the costumes were just as bad, but you didn't care. Yeah. Because the story was so good.
The story was good.
You cared about the relationships. It was one of those things, like, you're talking about the movie, those costumes weren't that great. Yeah, they kind of suck, but it doesn't matter because everything else was so great. But, oh my God.
Did we give Logan a mask already?
And then, like, you're watching X-Men 3, and you're like, those costumes like this?
His best feature.
In the other movies? You're like, yeah? Why didn't I notice this? Well, because the movie was shit like this one. My number two, and I'm surprised this was not higher on your list, was Green Goblin from Spider-Man 2002. Was that supposed to be intimidating? Willem Dafoe's spectacularly delicious performance could have ranked as one of the best in comic book movie history, but is squashed by a silly-looking Green Ranger-like costume that does as much disservice to any villain as any costume could. I couldn't believe it.
It was bad.
Like, when you saw that, and did you ever see Alex Ross's designs for that costume?
I did.
Oh my God.
How did it turn into that?
Those were nowhere near his designs.
They ran out of money. All right, we're on to the number one. John, you said you had one
number
more.
I do have a number one. Now, I picked these costumes mostly because they were awful, but awfully fun. Awful fun. And now I'm going very, very obscure with this. I'm going with the Blue Man Group from... I'm sorry, the Hydra agents... from Nick Fury's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when David Hasselhoff was the...
I've never actually seen that movie.
I saw it.
It's delightful. And the Hydra agents look like the Blue Man Group. It is awful, but so much freaking fun. And that's my number one pick.
Mine is short and two words. Nipple bats!
I got that, Pete.
Because nipple bats still haunts my dreams.
God, yes.
Just like Riddler.
I got something, if you haven't seen it, and I'm sure you have. If you haven't seen it, I'll beat it. I'm going to call up just a Google image here, just in case you have not. All right. My number one. And by the way, this is the third time he's making an appearance on this list. Superman from The Death of Superman 1998, which was unreleased. Nicolas Cage, have you seen this?
I've not.
Nicolas Cage was Superman?
You don't know. In 1997, they started to make a Superman movie directed by Tim Burton with Nicolas Cage as Superman. It never got released. They built sets. They had a script. They got as far as almost shooting principal photography. You are going to change your number one, and so will you. All right? Mm. I'm going to show you this in just a second. Are you ready?
Yeah. Oh, he's cute.
I've actually seen that. Oh, my God.
Okay. Give me a moment to compose myself. I have to get through this. Wow. Just, although the movie was never released, that hasn't stopped the images for what was to become of Nicolas Cage's Superman from circulating the internet. If ever there was a reason for damning the existence of the internet, this is it.
Hallelujah.
He looks stoned and bears a mullet in what appears to be an oily blue rubbered red accented suit. Listen, Willem Dafoe's Green Goblin thinks this costume is bad.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Batman and Robin almost killed Batman in 1987, but this certainly would have spelled the end for Superman.
Oh my god. Why did he not at least cut his hair?
It's not his hair, it's a wig or something. I remember that picture being.
Oh my god, I thought that was. That's I've it. Seen that before, I thought it was a joke.
No, that's, no, the, that's not that's a joke.
Alright, we need to make this happier and not think about the bad and look at the good.
Yes, like, let's please now. Do this.
So,
it's good that that movie was never
Johnny,
made.
Do you actually have five or should I jump on this?
Go for it.
My first one to counteract Amazing Spider-Man is the Spider-Man costume that Tobey Maguire wore. Because that is how I always pictured Spider-Man to be. The fact that the costume ripped, the fact that he could roll the mask up, and the fact that they showed all that in that movie made that seem like Peter Parker was underneath and that the costume was well put together.
Well, you have to forgive me because I have two honorable mentions here. And because I went with something that... Listen, I'm going with that costume because it's out there now and it was never released. But just to thank God it wasn't. But the fact that it does exist somewhere is... So I'm going to go with Alex Ross's Spider-Man and Green Goblin designs for Spider-Man the movie. The Spider-Man black with the... I made that Halloween costume mm-hmm. for a costume contest. His Spider-Man to me was like... I know it wasn't right off the comic book page, but I'm like, oh my god, that's awesome. And Adam West, Batman. For the 1960s, it was perfect. Right. It was a perfect. Right. But my number five, I kept coming back to this, and I'm going to explain why. It's the Arrow costume from the TV show.
That is a pretty awesome costume.
I think you can make the argument that with all of the modernization and the, I'd say, the scaling back, trying to make it realistic... That really does, pun intended, hit the mark. Mm-hmm. It manages, like, he's instantly recognizable as Green Arrow. But, at the same time, it's not laughable. Like, when he's fighting around in the back alleys, you don't laugh at him. So, that's my number five.
I'm going to go my number five, and you guys are going to kill me for this, but my number five has got to be the new Spider-Man. The Amazing Spider-Man costume.
What are you talking about?
I liked how it was integrated. I liked how they, with the web shooters especially, how he built the web shooters.
That they light up so that the villains can see exactly
what they're... But they're mechanical. They're not organic. They're supposed to be mechanical web shooters. They were never supposed to be organic web shooters.
I agree with that, but they flash red.
They do flash red, but... What are you going to do? That is convincing because it's his first attempt at a web shooter, and I admired that.
Do you mind that he's tossing back shots of vodka between fights, though? Because he's got the jaundiced yellow eyes.
You know what? I'm just going to go with this. I'm okay with this. Number five, so go.
My number four is Thor. Although the movies aren't necessarily like...
I haven't seen them.
Yes. But I saw... I mean, obviously I've seen plenty of the,
You've
the
seen
shots.
Plenty
and
of
I
Thor.
Saw Avengers.
Yeah. Johnny yeah. Fire's back.
Honestly...
Good one, Jeff.
Thank you.
It's so close to the original Thor costume, while at the same time modernized, that it just seems perfect for the character.
He almost made my worst list.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I love this, though.
Like,
it's so close.
This is good.
So
we're
close to what it is.
This is great that we're disagreeing. Okay, yeah. Did you ever see that old Flash TV show? Only lasted one season?
Yeah.
Boy, did he just run right off the page. I love that costume. He was a little bit too buff, though. You know, he was almost like a bodybuilder when he should have had more of a runner's build. So that's my number four. That was a really good costume.
My number four is got to be actually to juxtapose your Thor. I'm going to go with Loki.
Ooh,
Loki was a pretty costume. Dominant costume. He was very secure. He was stately. He was
medicine.
He was evil. And it was great because we wanted to love this character.
That is a good pick, you mewling quim.
Thank you, sir. Number three.
Number three, although not the best movie in the world, Spawn.
That almost made my worst.
Really?
Yeah, mine
yeah.
too.
No.
This is a really good... This is a good time.
The fact that in the movie they actually gave the cape a mind of its own
that
worked
yeah.
so unbelievably well with the character.
Yeah.
I've only seen clips of it since then because that was all CGI.
Mm-hmm. Well, in my brain. I haven't seen
it. Right, right. I know what you're saying, but don't watch it again because it's nowhere close. No. We're at number three?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, got me excited for the movie, the original Captain America costume when he was in World War II. That looked amazing. I actually put it as like that may be one of the best translations of a comic book costume I've ever seen.
Number three, I've got to go with Iron Man. Iron Man had a pretty awesome suit, and the way Tony Stark not only had the suit, but his relationship with the suits, and the way he coaches the suit and interacts with the suits, I thought that was just perfect. I thought it was absolutely perfect.
Which is my number two, is the Iron Man suit from the Iron Man movies.
Rock and roll.
Man, that thing is perfect. Then again, Robert Downey Jr. is perfect for Tony Stark. I think it kind of feeds off of one another. The costume works so well with the person. But they just used it so well. Even though overutilized in the last film, very, very good costume.
Spider-Man 2002. As much as I love that Alex Ross, I was really hoping they did it because I was assuming they would screw it up. And then it's just so faithful to the original costume. Like, oh, he's right out of the comics. It's perfect.
Yeah. My number two, I've...
Number one.
It's number one. My number two has got to be Big Daddy from Kick-Ass, because he was just cool, and to see Nicolas Cage putting on the costume, drawing on the mustache, and all this stuff, it was just a lot of fun.
The Adam West impersonation was flawless.
I think
mine's good, but when he started talking, oh, you got it.
Nick Cage.
I was like, yes, sir.
Definitely nailed it.
You cannot be Superman. No.
My number one is going to be controversial, but... The reason behind it, the X-Men First Class yellow costumes, because they were an updated version of the original X-Men's costumes. And I thought it was done so well. And when they walked out of the plane wearing those in that movie, I was like, holy hell, they got it.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment stuck with me.
Number one for me, and this should be no surprise, making his fourth appearance on the list, but my number one best, Superman, Christopher Reeve, Superman the movie. I mean, the dude put in the work. It was to the letter, pun intended, directly lifted from the comic book page.
It really was.
Right down to the yellow S on the back. And it only works on him. He sold that costume.
Wow.
He really did.
Too bad he's gone now. All right.
Wow.
Sorry.
That hurts.
Not cool, man.
I'm very, very sorry. That's
one of my all-time heroes. I went and saw him speak.
My number, as did I, at Kent State.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as did I. My number one is the Batman from Batman Begins. Bruce Wayne building his suit from Batman Begins really built our relationship with the Bat suit. As we see him assembling the pieces to go from his jumping from balcony to balcony to the great awesomeness of the bat suit, that is my favorite comic book suit.
Memory cloth.
Yes.
Let me come back to you. Go ahead with your. Oh, you were.
That's it. Yeah,
that's it.
Could we agree though? And I like that. I didn't make my best list because I still think there's room for the bat suit. You know what I mean? I mean, I like the Batman. I actually like the Batman Begins one, and they really went different with it for the Dark Knight and the Dark Knight Return or Dark Knight Rises. But I still think we haven't seen the best Batsuit yet.
Huh. Interesting. I could definitely see room for improvement. Yes. All right. Now we are moving into a segment called Ridiculous Storylines,
which is awesome. Ridiculous Storylines trivia. It is finally my turn. We have done this twice in the past, and what it is really is we grab two storylines from one of our favorite, or, you know, just a comic book that we are familiar with, and present ridiculous storylines that are two of them that are real to the people in the podcast, and add a third one, which is a little special because we make it ourselves. So we make a little wager here, and we say that I think I have a point. Johnny has a point, and you have nothing?
I think it's, I'm bringing up the rear on this one. Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out who's going to have the most points after we're done doing this a few cycles. So today is my turn, and I'm going to do ridiculous storyline trivia from Spider-Man, which makes sense, fitting for me. So I need Darren and Johnny to pick a number between 1 and 10 to know who goes first. Johnny.
7.
5.
It was 8. So Johnny goes first. Get ready, listen closely, my friend.
What do we got?
Storyline number one. 30 years into Spider-Man's future, super criminals are a thing of the past, but the government is run by a merciless police force. People question what has happened to Spider-Man over the years and wonder why he's not returned to stop this brutal police force from destroying New York. Middle-aged Peter Parker runs into a group of children that are being pursued by said police and ultimately sees them get a beating, and he also gets a beating from the police. After his beating, he looks up and sees graffiti that says, "Where did you go?" That is why the children were being chased, in reference to Spider-Man being missing forever. Peter quickly returns home and remembers his past and the loss of his Aunt May and Mary Jane. Suddenly, J. Jonah Jameson shows up to apologize to Peter for the years of abuse and giving him a package that contains his old camera and old black mask to his black suit. Peter throws on the black mask and takes the streets to bring the cops that beat him to justice. Spider-Man returns to J. Jonah and is asked if Spider-Man has returned, in which Spidey replies by punching J. Jonah Jameson in the face. In response to Spider-Man's return, the current mayor releases Electro, Mysterio, Kraven the Hunter, the Sandman, Scorpion, and Hydro-Man from prison, offering the now-named Sinners Six their freedom from New York if they beat Spider-Man to a pulp. Once this team of villains finally corners Spidey, he is saved by a zombie version of Doc Ock and brought to the graves of Aunt May, Mary Jane, and Uncle Ben. Peter struggles with his past demons, specifically that of his radioactive semen killing his wife, Mary Jane, only to emerge from her grave wearing his blue and red outfit. With a quick return to the city and a fast battle between Venom, who appeared as one of the mayor's closest people, and the police department, Peter quickly accepts his role as hero again. He returns to his wife's grave and says he will join her one day. But for now, he has responsibilities. That's number one.
Confirmed.
Number two. Spider-Man, while on a daily swing through New York, finds a young kid that is struggling with personal issues. He doesn't want to share his problems with anyone, especially his parents, and starts to act very strange. Spider-Man talks to the child, and the child quickly tells him that he has been sexually abused by an older man, as well as many other problems. During the exchange, Spider-Man tells the boy that when he was a child, he used to spend afternoons at an older man's house, whose name was Skip. Skip would play billiards with Spidey, as Peter Parker, of course, discuss books as well as other things. One day, Skip showed Peter some special magazines, and it surprised the boy. Soon after, Skip approached Peter about conducting scientific experiments, such as touching each other like the people in the magazines. Peter was unable to escape, but days later tells his aunt and uncle why he no longer felt okay spending time with Skip. Spider-Man finishes telling the young boy that he did the right thing by telling an adult, as he had when he was a child. If everyone were honest like this, no more children would suffer the way that they had. That is number two.
Confirmed.
Number three. Peter Parker has always struggled with his inner spider, and once again, he has another story with that. After a particularly brutal battle against Alistair Smythe, where he's knocked into a nuclear reactor that is controlling a new breed of spider slayers, Peter starts to notice changes within him. He quickly decides that his best bet would go ask Reed Richards for a hand. Just when Peter finishes his web sling to the Baxter Building, he realizes that he's growing hairier and that he has gained a few arms. He remembers that this has happened to him before, at least the arms, and he knows it can be fixed. Peter quickly enters the building and explains to the FF what has happened to him, and that he is worried that the nuclear reaction is causing him to turn completely into a spider. Reed quickly goes to work to find a way to reverse the reaction while allowing Peter to keep his abilities as Spider-Man. While resting, Peter finishes his transformation and shrinks to the size of a normal spider. He explores the Baxter Building aimlessly, trying to find someone to communicate with him, while his mind stayed human. He sees a glowing light against a wall and decides to crawl into, which sucks him in before he finishes climbing. He awakes to find himself on the ceiling of a lab with a group of school children beneath. He decides to lower himself to explore and accidentally lands on the hand of a young boy who freaks out. He bites him in response before falling to the ground and getting stomped. The panel scrolls up to reveal a young Peter Parker holding his hand. The young Peter goes through a few quick panels showing his past, the night after being bitten, discovering his powers, becoming Spider-Man, and fighting his Uncle Ben's killer. Effectively, we're to assume that Peter Parker gave himself his Spider-Man abilities, creating a paradox that is hard to wrap your mind around. Of course, in the next issue, this is all cleared up. And Peter Parker wakes up in the Baxter building, realizing that it had all been a dream. Those are the three.
Mr. Caps?
Those are incredible.
So
those are incredible. I'm between two choices right now.
Okay.
I'm going to call number two, Foul.
Okay, number two, Foul. Darren.
I hope that you're wrong, because I hope that he did not come up with that. I'm going to go with number one.
Number one is Spider-Man Reign, a miniseries that took place in the 90-ish area.
Yeah.
Number two, Spider-Man Power Pack number one.
Good God.
Thank God, because if he had invented that,
that would have been great.
I would not feel safe with him in the room.
Number three was my creation of Peter Parker giving himself his spider powers.
Boom.
That is 2 points for me.
Oh, man. 2-1-0.
Woo! All right.
Well, we are now on to something that is a bit timely. The Mount Rushmore of comic book creators, okay? So Mount Rushmore, four people: Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Eisenhower, and
Benjamin Franklin.
No, Abraham Lincoln.
That's what I meant.
Was it what you meant?
No.
I'm sorry, not Eisenhower, Roosevelt.
Thank you, Roosevelt. It's your fault, you threw me off.
No, it's not. You didn't know what you're talking about. So, Phil, who is your Mount Rushmore of comic book creators?
Well, it was difficult to narrow it down to one person for each four heads. So, and the word comic book was weird, too, so I'm going to start from the bottom and work my way up. I went comic creators. Mm-hmm. My first head is Bill Watterson.
I just went through my head.
The
just
creator of Calvin and Hobbes.
Yep.
Just, I think, honestly, Calvin and Hobbes is what got me looking at panels.
Okay.
So my number four is definitely Bill Watterson. And once again, it's still a comic book.
Fair enough. It's a comic strip. Fair enough.
My next three are actually morphed faces of two people. Because not very often did you get one person that can claim rights to create something.
Certainly.
Yeah.
So my third is Bob Kane and Bill Finger, the creators of The Batman.
Batman.
Because
made it.
Batman. The second is Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, because they created Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Moving all the way to the left to my first face is Stan Lee still and Jack Kirby.
Yep.
Basically the fathers of Marvel Comics, creating Thor, the Hulk, Iron Man, the original X-Men, Silver Surfer, Doctor Doom, Galactus, Uatu, Magneto, the Inhumans, Fantastic Four, blah, blah, blah,
everything.
Blah, blah, blah,
everything.
Blah, blah, blah. So when I think of comics, those are the people that I see.
John, well, you just stole two of mine. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby were definitely on my list.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to surprise everybody with Alan Moore has made my list. I've only got two faces left, and Alan Moore has to be up there. He did more for comics. He took out the Bob Kane. Bob Kane almost made my list. But Batman isn't the Bob Kane Batman anymore. He's now the Alan Moore Batman.
I think everybody comes from their roots. That's why it's like Spider-Man.
But you don't have the Bob Kane.
Well,
see, that's the argument. Is Alan Moore helped to reinvent Batman. Am I wrong? Alan Moore created Batman and gave more to...
I would disagree, but I'll let you finish.
He gave more to the comic book universe than some... He gave us V for Vendetta, Watchmen, so much stuff. Alan Moore is on my Mount Rushmore. That's what I'm saying.
Not arguing.
No, and I know this isn't a debate, but the last face shouldn't be a surprise. It's Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, no, I saw that one coming.
Yeah, everybody saw that one coming. The guy is amazing. And I'm closing my Mount Rushmore with that.
Would you guys disagree if we said we were going to have to come up with a national monument and it would be Stan Lee, Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, Bob Kane, along those lines. What if I were to tell you, and you kind of already stole my thunder on this, one of those guys shouldn't be on there at all. In fact, one of those guys doesn't deserve as much credit as he's gotten.
Are we talking Lee?
No. Bob Kane. Let me give you the list of what Bill Finger created.
Oh.
He gave the alter ego of Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson, created Robin, created Alfred, created the Batmobile, created the Batcave, created the look of Batman, created most of the villains, created Gotham City, created the supporting characters of Jim Gordon. So the question becomes, what did Bob Kane do? Almost everything that we know of Batman was created by Bill Finger. That's kind of the reason I brought this up, because if you're talking about the great comic creators, oh yeah, Jeff Stanley, Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster, Bob Kane, if you're going to have four, I would, you know, if there's going to be a fifth, Jack Kirby for certain would be top of the list right there. But, like, the more I've read, there's a book out right now about Bill Finger, and I haven't read the entire thing, but I'm reading through this, and it's like, and just the first thing is like, here are the list of things that Bill Finger is responsible for Batman. Really, the only thing that Bob Kane was responsible for was the name Batman. In fact, Bob Kane drew a picture of what he wanted Batman to look like, and he had literally bat wings, and he was wearing like a Domino Zorro sort of mask. That was his Batman. Everything else, everything else that you can think of, you name it, the Batarang, the Batboat, all of that was Bill Finger. So I mean, I don't know. We don't have to be. I don't know, man. It's so weird.
But I mean, that's a similar argument to the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko thing as well. How much work did Stan actually do? And I mean, it's an endless battle between all of those things.
Right. That's true. And back to your original point, Alan Moore had a hand in Batman, but I would say that those who had much more of a hand in modernizing Batman would be Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams.
I could see that argument being made.
I don't know. It's weird to think, like... I'd say, though, with your argument, Stanley had a lot more to do with his creations than Bill than yeah, Bob Kane may have.
I was just saying
have.
That argument's yeah, out there as
but
well.
That's just like... But the thing is that Bill Finger passed away a long time ago, and he would have been 100, I think, this past year. And there was a movement for a while, forgive me for forgetting the author's name, to get Bill Finger a Google Doodle to raise awareness about what the guy did. I don't know if it didn't happen. But it is something that he got nothing.
He was
out of
definitely
that.
The Tesla to
he got absolutely
Bob Kane's Edison, you're right.
He got absolutely no respect for Batman, no royalties, never saw a dime from Batman. Passed away without any fanfare, any announcement. And it's really like, from what I understand, with DC still fighting the Schuster and the Siegel and Schuster estate.
Oh, always.
I think what you're going to see within the next year or so is Bill Finger is going to start getting a co-credit, at least. It's going to be Batman created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger, not just... I knew about this a long time ago. I knew that Bill Finger had a large hand in Batman, but I just always assumed that he was an assistant. I didn't realize he created so much of that.
All right, you guys, it looks like we're done for tonight. Thank you for listening. This has been this has been Panel Scanners. Hush. It's been Panel Scanners. I'm Johnny Caps. This is Darren. This is Phil. And we're signing out. Have a great time.